This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We are on remote with Henry Mills, poet and musician, and he's going to open us up with a poem.
Hi, Grace. Thanks for having me. This first poem is called Earthenware. Despite chemo-blunted taste buds, my tia maintains each tortilla on the comal's surface puffs with its predecessor's essence. I'm not one to believe a titan's hands sculpted from muck, the first people, but marvel at how earthen comales survive metallurgy. The skillet, would it otherwise be machine-made, molten-poured, blasted clean? This is from before the first bomb, before the old languages turned to shrapnel. A well-crafted tortilla right off the comal. Taste it, she says. Something endures.
Henry Mills, you never disappoint us. You are the one I remember from Washington, D.C. You set the world on fire then, and you're doing it all over again. Are you in Washington now? Do you live there now?
No, I got into NYU to study poetry, and I've been in New York ever since. I've been here about nine-ish years.
Oh, so you're in New York. Where were you born?
I was born in D.C. My parents, they fell in love during the Solidarity Movement to get the U.S. to stop arming the death squads in El Salvador. And they didn't even speak each other's language at the time very well. Yeah, they, you know, but love has no borders, right?
And your work continues that effort. You are continuing the struggle with language. Please give us two poems together, because when you put two disparate words together, everything explodes.
Wow.
So let's hear two.
Thank you so much. I'm going to read a poem about the riots in D.C., which happened and started in the Adams Morgan Mount Pleasant neighborhood after a police officer shot somebody, one of the recently arrived refugees from all the displaced of Central America. And I want to give a shout out to Kike Aviles, a D.C. Salvadoran poet who also inspired the style of this poem. It's called The Mount Pleasant Riots of 1991. Cinco de Mayo, historians drink to Mexico's victory. But in Mount Pleasant, the barrio just drinks. And the recently arrived from the burning cities know nothing of the law that says, you can't stagger down Columbia Road with an open bottle. This is how the riot started, with a man, his cervecita, and huevos so big he could whoop a cop. The officer said she shot him as he pulled a knife, but I heard it was as he unbuckled his belt. Here's a real bravo toast to the desert dancers appeasing the air for an ice-cold corona. Here, compa, dear reader, an ice-cold corona. For those who know the taste of sidewalk salt, I give you the cool amber of a Molotov. Tell me your breath don't smell like gasoline. Ever been so thirsty you burn a block for a beer? No? Then this ain't for you. Go ahead, call 911. Next time rookies round up the handcuffed, remind them to lock the doors. Here's to whoever fished a flare out the paddy wagon and fed it to the gas tank. In El Salvador, around 2001, they dollarized their economy. This poem is called Colones on the Eve of Dollarization. Colón gazes from a jar of American coins, like a lost senior on a bus to nowhere. I fish him out, add him to the mound whose melt value exceeds its face value. Soon, his cheeks sag into the chrome goop which circulated the veins of El Salvador. Mountains sold for this. Indios were opened and filled like piñatas of nickel for this. If I could dip my hand, know the labor, thrash of the corbo, cane juice drip off the chin, flip of the bubbling pupusa, comal fingertip singe, the boy beneath the branches of yellow blushing coffee beans waking in the fog. If I could find the centavitos I paid Tia Imelda for blonde highlights, I might feel my curls between her fingers, or reach deeper still, shoulder deep, and grasp a head of hair akin to my own. Drag body after body from the money cauldron. Deep dive through that orgy of limbs, mangroved bone, hand flowers twitching in the gargle of molten power disenchanted.
Henry, I'm really speechless. I'm just still thinking of your breath smells like gasoline, the first poem, and the second, like a lost senior on a bus to nowhere. What a phrase. Your cadence is remarkable. Are you getting enough notice?
To read?
To be. Are you recognized for the poet you are? And if not, why not? Do you have a book out?
No, but I have a manuscript looking for a home called the Indigo Field.
Indigo Field. Oh, okay. And you got your MFA in New York?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How did you find that experience? Was it helpful?
I would say if I had a, you know, baseball cards, all-star deck, I'm using the simile. It's like if I had a deck of my favorite living poets.
Classmates. Whoa, some of my classmates, what a good thing
would
to
go
say.
In that, would go in that deck too.
Wow, that's really something to say. Most people don't come out of an MFA with that positive a feeling, but New York is New York. Come on.
Well, you know, I think they did, the NYU program did a lot to address maybe some deficiencies it had in the years past. Mm. By the time I got there,
they were cool.
I didn't feel like a token, and I was just in awe of my classmates and my teachers.
Wow.
So I might feel cooler if I had more critiques, but I have a lot of praise for the program there.
That's really very important to hear. You are a poet and a musician. Which is which? Is it different? Is part of you different as a poet? And another part of you is the musician? Are they equal?
I don't know if you've ever seen that clip from an Anne Sexton interview. And she says, music beats us. And she's listening to a record and she loses herself in the music. Music is I feel a more ancient form before language, whatever we were back then, had music. And the written word is a recent development too, in the, if you take the scope of all of our history. But I do love me the line. I do love the page too. So
You're twice blessed.
Yeah, I don't want to privilege one over the other. I do see I can get things from music that I can't from poetry, for sure. A certain catharsis or volume. The fact that I'm plugging into something that has electricity that's pushing my expression further, and you know, like a guitar or an electric guitar or an amplifier.
Do you teach, Henry?
I was a teacher for 16 years, and I've just stepped away to make more room for creative endeavors. Right now, I'm in a playing guitar in an off-Broadway show called House of Telescopes that just opened. And
will it be there in this? I'm going to go.
Really?
I'm not coming to New York till this summer. Are you going to be on?
It's till April 21st.
Oh, until April 21st.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great No.
But I do have, also have a single coming out on my birthday, April 15th. My first single as a solo artist. I've released stuff in bands before, but never on my own.
Tell us the title so everyone in the world will get it. What's the title?
I've created a persona called Aquino the Feathered Serpent, named after this indigenous rebel from like 1778 named Anastasio Aquino in El Salvador, who led an uprising. And I'm setting this character in the year 3032. And the first song I'm releasing is called Hatchling. And it's got sci-fi and mythology. And
well, how do we get it? We just Google Henry Mills?
I think I hope so. I don't know. There's a character from a Scorsese film.
We will do poetry now and PR later. So if you let me know, I will circulate that information.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, and now we want two poems from Henry Mills, who is a poet, a musician, and extraordinary. There's no other voice on the planet like him.
Wow, thank you. I first knew them by scent, then touch. Our nerves coated long ago among an enemy in the swaying rack. Then the sky became indigo and stained my tongue. Before English, before Spanish, before I opened my mouth to so much rain, a membrane turns to selfhood, and selfhood into a row of teeth, and a row of teeth. Show me again, I said, where sharks sleep. And they opened their mouth.
And another.
Thank you. My great-grandfather worked in the west of El Salvador. He was a gold miner. This poem is about that. It's called Rapture. Before climbing down the shaft, my great-grandfather prays, not to the sun who rose from the tomb, but to the serpent who swallows men into the dirt. He'd seen too many boys rise from the mine, heavy in their father's arms. It was no cave-in, he said, but the gnash of fangs. At times, a head of hair, a leg, an outstretched finger, like the tail of a rat, poking between jaws.
Oh, Henry, I think that each one is my favorite. Each one is my favorite. The first poem of those two, when you say, show me again, I said, I hope every listener knows how a poet pivots in a poem to keep the energy. You narrate and narrate, and then you switch the energy by changing it up. Show me again, I said. I just want people to point out the craft that is underneath these words. They would not work otherwise. They're powerful words, but there is really structure with your work. You really did. You didn't miss any classes.
It kind of happens almost intuitively. Something about the form of a sonnet. It's like approximately at around the last two or four couplets, there's a revelation, a volta of some kind. Mm-hmm. And that carries over even when it's not a certain amount of lines. Mm-hmm. So it's like about now you should be having an epiphany.
Well, that's how we hold our art. That's all form is. And you have to know when to juggle it a little bit because it's about energy and shift. I know you are in an anthology, many of them probably by now, but the one that interests me the most is the one with Central American writing in the U.S. It's called The Wandering Song. Who put that out and who's in it?
It's put out by Tia Chucha Press. And funny enough, I'm confusing with another anthology. But yeah, it's put out by Tia Chucha Press. And I think even the poet I gave a shout out to, Kiki Aviles, is featured in it.
He's coming on our air this next month.
Wonderful. Yeah, he's been a family friend and big inspiration to me.
Did you know Gala Theater when you were in D.C.?
Yeah, I performed there also with one of my hardcore bands.
I'll tell you, I think it's the oldest stage in D.C.
Yeah. I also had a horrible audition there, one time trying to be an actor there.
Oh.
No, but it was a good experience. It was fun.
You were probably young, right?
Yeah. I was trying to do a role from Garcia Lorca's Bodas de Sangre.
Oh, I'd love to see that. I would love to see that. We would put it on the air. So who is the publisher? Who is the editor? Who got the idea for this anthology? And how did they get the poets all together?
I saw a call out on Facebook, I believe.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it was a coalition of Central American writers in the U.S. who put their heads together to make sure our voices are represented.
I'm so glad. I am so glad. Let's have two more poems from Henry Mills. You will not forget in a hurry.
You know, I've been thinking about how I've been thinking about Gaza a lot recently. Obviously, it's been on my mind every day as the horrors. And I see how Israeli snipers intentionally target knees and other body parts. So many people have amputations. And I'm going to read this poem about my cousin, who during the Salvadoran Civil War lost his fingers from shrapnel. And I'll probably mention Palestine again later on in the show, but I'm going to read this poem first called Scholar's Mate. It's also about chess. On a concrete patio in Barrio de las Flores, my cousin Chamba and I square off over the green-white chessboard. I haven't seen him since we were 3 and can't help but gawk as he rubs his beard with the stumps of his fingers. When he was small, a Huey strafed the walls of his house. Abuela's options were either pray God would skew the hail, or heft her sobrino over her shoulder and dash. This 4'5" lady somehow hoisted Chamba and ran, the gunner tracing her path with an M60, cobblestone shattering between her toes as fragments writhed Chamba's fingers at the knuckles. I look at my own hands, guilty of being whole, like I should spare at least my pinky. How charitable, as if Chamba needs mending. Did I mention it's his 4th move? That the lost in thought beard rubbing is all for show? He clutches his queen, says, there's nothing heavier than Metallica. Then drops her right in the phalanx of my pawns, trained on the peace with which no one can part.
Mm.
Okay, let's read The Dud. This is another theater where the Salvadoran Civil War in the 80s, where the U.S. sent bombs to be dropped on peasants. And just as Biden has sent billions to Israel to drop on Palestinians. And this particular poem is in part of the result, actually, of a prompt in which I imitated Yehuda Amakai's Radius of the Blast, or Radius of the Bomb. It's called The Dud. Dud as in faulty. The Dud. I stare into the crater the size of a backyard pool. The rusted shell thudded, and failed to blow, now rests on a crude sawhorse in the Museo de la Revolución with a sign that says, it's 500 pounds. If a foreign museum were to have it shipped off, encased in glass in a white room with track lights, it would divorce the bomb from what it means in these hills, where it spared the man carting goat milk ice cream, the boys selling bagged tap water, the woman with a basket calling tortillas in a siren wail that reaches the town square, the swing set swaying as if someone had just jumped off.
I'm listening to language, but I'm also watching the scaffolding of the poem in my mind as it unfolds. I remember the first poem of that duo. Also, when you stop the energy and say, I look at my hands, that shifts everything in the poem. And how you make your cousin the victor and how he has not been diminished at all.
You know, that was in part an effort that I realized that a lot of my poems, I wasn't coming under the lens of examination. It was just always others. And it didn't seem fair. So I thought I should come under the same similar gaze and not always be the hero or the pitied, you know.
I don't see it that way. I don't think you're in the landscape, but you're never self-aggrandizing. It's always to shine the light on a bigger purpose. All of your work is about something bigger than you. That's why it will last.
I'm glad it's working.
It is working. And I'm really glad you're giving yourself time to write and to be a musician after, was it a teacher in the general schools, like lower grades, upper grades?
It was, over the last 16 years, I've taught almost all grades from second grade to undergrads, mm-hmm. Mostly creative writing and music production.
Well, that is laudable. Before we go into the next poem, I do want to hear about your music. You have a phrase here that is just makes me bonkers. Decolonial futurist rap project. I love each one of those words, decolonial futurist rap. So when you put them all together, what does it mean?
I'm really inspired by a lot of Black futurism, and I wanted to see it for my roots. For example, on my mother's side, my Pipil roots, the indigenous of El Salvador. So what would it be like to see our people represented in sci-fi and to still raise the hip hop flag? I've drawn from our history and also from American history and all throughout the 70s and 80s and manifested it in the year 3032. So it's an effort
what does it sound like?
Well, there's a lot of punk and metal influence. Mm-hmm. There's also synths with distortion and I feel confident doing my poetry recitations and also rapping and screaming, but my pitch isn't great. So I kind of draw from like Zach De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine as like a vocal style. And
are you a guitarist?
I do play guitar.
And vocalist?
Yeah. I composed all the music and recorded it all myself.
Composer. Is it all scripted on paper?
I have to memorize it.
It's not
as cool when you're up there holding a piece of paper.
I know, Henry,
running around stage with it.
I do know what it is for you to perform, but then I worry that these things are lost in the air. If these songs can't be repeated, then.
Oh yes, they'll be available on all streaming platforms.
Okay. We want you available on all streaming platforms, especially this one with two more poems.
Okay. So let's go to, since we're talking about radio and we're on the radio, I want to read a poem about guerrilla radio. the efforts of the guerrilla army in El Salvador to play banned music from the air to alert townships when the death squads were coming so they could evacuate. This and they were called Radio Venceremos. This poem is called The Rise of Radio Venceremos, 1977 to 1979. The news building fell in a cloud of itself. To be caught with a political flyer was to be taken to a cell from which only torturers emerged. These and other disappearing acts were why rebels needed a medium where they could speak and have no bullet interrupt them. They hijacked radio stations, left cassettes looping on air till the military began to guard the studios. Then one day, a compañero returned with a Valiant Viking 1950s shortwave. From Valhalla, he said with a grin, setting it on the workbench. As bombs thundered in the hills, smoke rose from the old circuits the engineer soldered anew. He lowered the amp into the chassis like a germanium heart into the ribcage of an ancient warrior. It was time to raise the antenna. He cued Wagner, strode down the street, barefoot children crowding doorways to peek at the man conducting a hidden orchestra as he tested how far the signal could go before it dimmed.
It was time to raise the antenna. It was time to raise the antenna. How do you write? What triggers you? How do you get, do you go back? Do you just kind of run it like a film in front of your eyes and go back into history? This is history.
Sometimes it starts with a concrete object. In this case, it was the shortwave radios on display at the museum I referenced called Museo de la Revolución, which is in the mountainside of Morazan, eastern El Salvador. It was a stronghold for the guerrilla army. And this museum is outside, built around this bomb crater that I mentioned in the dud. And as you walk around outside in through the forest, you come across different stations, and one of them had a lean-to with all these short waves that presumably the guerrilla army would use to broadcast. And I tried to start there with a concrete object, but that's not always how poems start, but it helps ground me.
An image. Mm-hmm. Do you know the work of Carolyn Fourche?
Oh, of course.
Okay. I just want to make sure she sees this program because it will make her feel very fulfilled.
I'm a big fan. Yeah, The Colonel is a classic. Mm-hmm.
She's just written a memoir about it, which is, and that you continue that work is, to me, very fulfilling.
I have it somewhere behind me.
I see. Don't try to, all those books behind you. Are they ABC order?
No, they're by genre.
Oh, let us have a final poem.
So I was thinking about some of the monsters that emerged from the Civil War era. One was Monte Rosa, trained like many of the School of the Americas graduates in counterinsurgency. School of Americas is a counterinsurgency army base in Fort Benning, Georgia. And they teach them these most horrific tactics. And now I'm thinking about all the tactics used in Gaza and Palestine. I just feel such a connection to, I just feel like I'm watching my history play out, not just on my mother's side, but on my father's Jewish side, the horrors of the Holocaust manifested again in this strip of land that's even smaller than El Salvador in Gaza and the West Bank. In this poem, it's called The Congregation Interrogates Monte Rosa, and it's after one particular massacre in El Salvador. And El Mozote, where they kettled everyone into a church and fired at them through the windows. And it's in their voice, the voice of the congregation. Why did you feed us before you shot us? Feeding, we thought, would soften your resolve. Seeing us eye the sacks of rice piled by your boots, the gratitude on our faces, at which you then took aim. Was gracias an appetizer? The way Pinochet's mercenaries gave Victor Jara a guitar before breaking his hands. At the School of the Americas, what class preceded intro to decapitation? Do they not teach how to neutralize guerrilla radio? How hard could it be in a country the size of Massachusetts to find their trailer in the woods and blow it up? Your mortars lobbed blindly over the cerro exploded live on air, warned us to flee into the hills. Why do you think you got stuck with a clip full of teeth, with no one to feed, then feed on? You know, we've begun to sing the songs of Victor Jara, under our breath at first, then louder, then louder.
The power of Henry Mills. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Rabada Fund, by the Sinipid Fund, by Natalie Canavore, Sandy Jackson Cohen, and the Anne Arundel Council for the Arts. Mike Turpin is our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.